The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Friday edition, Pro Football Talk Live. Peter King, Mike Florio here with you. We are both partially vaccinated. There's Peter at Martin Van Buren High School. He is now officially a Van Buren boy. That is where he received his first jab, showing the gang signal of the Van Buren boys. I think that's Kramer. Either that or Peter has himself a wig. Hello, Peter. Peter, when did you get jab number one?
I got jabbed on Wednesday, and the great thing was I think I had the same experience as you did. You look over and said, "Is that it?" I mean, it's a pretty thin needle, shall we say.
Well, I try never to look at the needle. That's a habit that I developed at a very young age. That's one of the hold your breath. Don't look at the needle. And yeah, it's done. It's like, wait a minute. No, you're kidding. And then I'm thinking, did they really give it to me? Is this some sort of a psychological experiment to see, you know, if the placebo effect operates on something like this? But my arm is sore. So if it's mental, it's very effective, because it definitely feels like something was stuck in my arm yesterday. But hey, everybody out there, when you get the opportunity, get the vaccine. What is it, like 3 weeks in between? I got to go back at some point and get another one, do you. I assume you got the Pfizer. I got the Pfizer. And everybody
right,
got the
I
Pfizer.
Got the Pfizer. You know, I was kind of rooting for the Johnson & Johnson. Not because of the one vaccine instead of two, but I was rooting for it because of all the talk about the variants and how much better it was going to be. And I don't mean to say I laugh, but I say, when I hear that people don't want to get the Johnson & Johnson because it isn't as good as the other ones, I don't get that. I don't get that at all. But I agree with you. And the other thing I would say is, this is all these things just got invented, these sites to do this. And from the time I walked in to the time I walked out was about 7 minutes, you know, plus the 15 that I had to wait before I left. It was fantastic. I mean, it is the easiest thing to do, and I guarantee you the peace of mind is worth it.
Yeah, I got mine yesterday in a location where the people were shuttled in. There were a lot of people there, a lot of people here getting the vaccine. West Virginia's been ahead of the curve in getting the vaccine distributed. And as the president said last night, 1 year to the day after the world turned upside down with the pandemic, get the vaccine whenever you can get it. I spoke to somebody in the healthcare community who knows how this all operates, and the advice I was given is get whichever one you can, whenever you can, however you can. It doesn't matter which one. It's basically splitting hairs. When we all get the protection, or at least as many of us as possible get it, and hopefully everyone will, that gets us to the point where we can get this behind us and lead normal lives again, although it's hard to even fathom what normal is once you get so used to abnormal. Abnormal becomes normal. We'll have an abnormal that's very good that's coming maybe by Memorial Day, at the latest by Labor Day. Summertime should be normal, and as long as people get their vaccines. Normal is not the case in Houston, where it's anything but normal as we try to figure out what's happening with Deshaun Watson and the Texans. Some developments yesterday, Peter, and just kind of a strange bit of timing. David Culley had a press conference yesterday afternoon, but not long before the press conference began, news emerged of an interview that he did with Jim Trotter and Steve Weish, the Huddle and Flow podcast, an NFL media production. And Culley said some things then that would prove to be different than the things he would say at the press conference regarding the status of Deshaun Watson. So let's begin with Culley, his appearance on the Huddle and Flow podcast, talking about the relationship between the Texans and quarterback Deshaun Watson.
Will Deshaun Watson be the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans in 2021?
He is our starting quarterback as of right now. He is our starting quarterback. Things happen between now and then, and then we'll see what happens.
See, Jimmy, Coach, you just open the door.
He hit us with the right now.
Just open the door with the right now. Exactly. Exactly. You've been around, Coach. You know better.
He is our starting quarterback.
Right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's right. Right now. And hopefully in the future. I'm excited to be here. One of the reasons I'm excited to be here is because of Deshaun Watson. And regardless of what's happening outside this building, which, quite frankly, fellas, I don't hear or read or listen to what happens outside this building. I don't. I have people come up to me all the time and ask me about this and ask me about this situation. But the point is, inside this building, inside this organization, we feel positive about moving forward with this football team with Deshaun Watson.
Culley also said we want guys who are all in. Well, it's obvious that Deshaun Watson isn't all in. And, you know, you heard right now multiple times, and I think it was Jim Trotter's voice saying, Coach, you've been around, you know better. It's like, yeah, don't say that. Don't say right now and then laugh about it, because, Peter, regardless of what was said at the press conference after the fact, clear impression, clear takeaway, clear conclusion to be drawn from Culley's comments, they're open to trading Deshaun Watson.
I mean, that's what it sounded like to me. Bring your best offer. But to me, Mike, I think that this is really a case of, you know, that the Texans and the head coach and general manager and the owner and Jack Easterby most likely never had a meeting and said, this is our public stance, period. You know, and in a case like this, an incendiary case like this, it's ridiculous that they don't go out into the world with their stories straight. That's what I thought when I heard this, Mike, because I would bet a lot of money that when Nick Caserio, the general manager of the Houston Texans, heard the soundbite that we just heard, I think he wanted to go over to the toilet and start to retch. I simply can't imagine that that is anything that Nick Caserio would have wanted his head coach to say.
Well, Peter, here's the bottom line. When you make someone the executive VP of football operations who is thoroughly unfit for that job, this is the kind of thing that happens, because someone who has that job, who shouldn't have that job, people say, oh, what do you have against Jack Easterby? I don't have anything against the guy. I have something against a process that puts someone who is unfit in that job. And there are so many executives throughout the NFL who are suited to and qualified for the position of executive VP of football operations, who have been involved in football operations, who have been through situations like this, who have the experience, the knowledge, the skill, the background, the resume, the credentials to have the job. When you put someone who doesn't have any of those things in that job, this is what happens. Why are we surprised? The guy doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know what he knows. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. So you don't have a message that is unified. You have a head coach who on the same day he's going to have this press conference, the interview drops where he says things that cut against what the team has been trying to convey, which is we're not trading Deshaun Watson. Now, I think when you piece it together, the message is they're acting like they're not trying to trade Deshaun Watson to increase their leverage and increase their ultimate trade value. And, gee, what a shock. Something that a team is sending to the world by way of a message as it relates to a player isn't true. We just played the other day, Peter, Matt Rhule's effusive comments about Cam Newton from the scouting combine a year ago and how he's looking forward to coaching him and this, that, and the other thing. They're trying to build trade value. That seems to be what the Texans are doing, that at some level they understand. Unless you've got guys who are completely on different pages, they understand where this is going. They're just trying to boost what they ultimately get by pretending to take this position that they're not going to trade him.
I mean, that's a clear inference that you can make from this, Mike. But I think whatever happens at the end of the day, and obviously there are 6 weeks left now until 6 weeks from last night is the start of the NFL draft. So, I mean, now you start to look at this, or 7 weeks, I'm sorry, 7 weeks. You start to look at this and you start to say, okay, is there a thaw? That's the question. Is there a thaw? All right. And it sounds very much like there is a thaw. And my one inference from everything that happened yesterday is that I've thought for a while that the last thing that Nick Caserio will do is trade Deshaun Watson by the trading deadline and give him exactly what he wants. Not by the trading deadline, but by the first night of the draft. But to me, I think yesterday, the events of yesterday start to tell me that Deshaun Watson, there's a very good chance he will be traded by then.
Whether it was Nick Caserio or Cal McNair or Jack Easterby or someone else, someone got to David Culley before it was time to have his press conference yesterday afternoon, roughly a half hour after the quotes began to emerge about right now and we want players who are all in. Here is some of Culley from yesterday when the question of Deshaun Watson inevitably and repeatedly came up.
Hey, Coach Culley, you've said repeatedly the team is committed to Deshaun Watson. Is he committed to you and the team?
Yes, he is.
How do you know that?
Well, he's a Houston Texan, and again, I know that I feel like that with the commitment that we've made to him, and I feel like that same commitment will be there with us also moving forward.
Now, that specific question, Peter, came after about 5 minutes of efforts by reporters to attack this from every way possible to get Culley to talk about Watson. Initially, Culley said he's not going to talk about any of the things he's spoken to Watson about, but then he would later claim Watson's committed to the team. How's he committed? Well, you never heard Culley say, he told me he's committed. Culley's making this clumsy inference. Well, we're committed to him, so he's committed to us. Come on. We all know what's gone on. And unless they're going to push back aggressively against the perception that's baked in over the course of the last 2 months that Watson wants out, none of this stuff is going to be plausible. And at times yesterday, Culley was essentially taking this position that I don't know anything about any of this. I don't have any reason to think he wants out. He said nothing to me to make me think. Come on. If the prevailing thought that literally has been around for 2 months now is untrue, you got to do a lot more to push back against it than to act 2 months later like you don't know what the hell people are talking about, Peter.
Well, not only that, Mike, but this is quite honestly the case, you know, where if your head coach is going to sit in front of a bunch of reporters virtually and is going to make statements on behalf of the team, first to Jim Trotter and Steve Weich, and secondly, to a group of reporters, he better have his story absolutely unequivocally straight. He should have been prepared for what happened yesterday. He should have been prepared before he taped his interview with Trotter and Weich, and he should have been prepared yesterday before he did his press conference for Here is all I'm saying on this. And if the questions continue to be asked, you give a Belichick. Guys, I've said what I'm going to say about Deshaun Watson. We want him here.
Already been addressed.
Silence.
Already been addressed.
Silence.
Already been addressed.
Answered that. So then they try four more times, which I would do too. You're a reporter. You need to try to get as much as you can. Sorry, guys. That's all I'm going to say on Deshaun. That's it. That's the way you handle this situation. If you handle it any other way, to me, you keep giving little ways to get in and ways to parse words and all that stuff. And so, you know, like if you were Deshaun Watson and you're watching him yesterday and you say that you hear the coach say, yeah, I think Deshaun's all in. I mean, if you're Deshaun Watson, first of all, you know you're not in. You know you told him you're not all in. And now he's saying Deshaun's all in. I mean, you know, that's the clear inference of what has happened so far. And so I just think to myself, if I'm Deshaun Watson, yesterday's media appearances by David Culley didn't want me to play for the team any more than I did already, which is 0.0.
That's a great point. It just reinforces how dysfunctional everything currently is in Houston. And it is dysfunctional when you consider the manifestations of the efforts at functionality. It's not working. If anything, it gets worse. And, you know, Peter, Miles Simmons and I were talking about this last night on PFTPM a little bit. And since I'm as unqualified as Jack Easterby to run a football operation, here's my two cents on what I would have done. If I would have caught wind of the Jim Trotter tweet that said David Culley claims Watson is the quarterback right now and Culley wants guys who are all in, if I'd have found out about that within a half hour before this press conference was set to begin, I would have thought about pulling the plug on the press conference and regrouping and trying to figure out a strategy in the aftermath of what was coming. And I want to hear the full quote. All I'm seeing is what Trotter says. I need to hear the full interview. We need to sit down and figure out how to properly message, given that this message is out there. And it's not like you're inconveniencing anyone. Everybody is at home. Nobody's showing up for these things. You don't even have to give a reason. We're just going to postpone it until next week. Whatever the case may be, and let the reporters think that they're rattled because this came out. They are rattled. And the end result was something that makes them seem even more rattled and even more disorganized and ultimately even more dysfunctional. But this is what happens again when you fire a great PR director in Amy Paulsik. And I haven't seen that they've hired anybody to take over at an executive level like she was running that messaging from the Houston Texans. And when you've got an executive VP of football operations who's over his skis. Everybody's over their skis, it seems like, except Caserio. Caserio's got to be wondering, what the hell did I do to deserve this? And why, of all the chances I've had to leave the Patriots, why in the hell did I take this one at this time, given everything?
Because he didn't know
with this team.
He didn't know. That's why. You know, he didn't know everything that he was getting into at the time. Did he know that on that day he took it? What day did he take it? Like January 4th or something like that? Did he know absolutely categorically that there was a line of demarcation that Deshaun Watson said, you know, knew at that moment that he was not going to cross? Did he know that? I don't think he knew that when he took the job. And that's why I think you're right. I question sincerely whether if Nick Caserio knew everything about this situation, whether he would have taken this job.
Well, but he knew Easterby. And I think that's the key. And I've realized over the course of the past several months, there are two distinct camps among folks in the NFL. And I don't know how big each one is, but one camp consists of the people who are charmed by Easterby. And the other camp, and I think there are more in this camp, Peter, consists of the people who think he's a snake oil salesman, a charlatan, a BS artist, an opportunist, a climber, anything but someone who has the chops to get it done. He just wants the money, the title, the power, without the ability to actually deserve it and wield it, and he talks a good game, and it's all a bunch of crap. That's the other camp. Two camps. Cassero is clearly in the first camp. Regardless of who else is in that first camp, Cal McNair and Nick Cassero may be the only two members of that club. But Cassero doesn't take that job if he doesn't think Easterby is legitimately qualified, on the up and up, not a snake oil salesman, not a charlatan, not a BS artist. There's no way Cassero takes that job. And if he does take that job and he thinks those things, then it's on him.
I think that Nick Cassero knew Jack Easterby in a different time and place. And I think that especially, you know, with Jack Easterby saying to Nick Cassero, I do not want to be the general manager. I've never wanted to be the general manager. You are going to come in with full general manager authority. Cal McNair says to him, Jack Easterby's not the general manager. I'm never going to make him the general manager. Never going to give him personnel authority. You have personnel authority on this team. You will have the biggest say, the biggest voice in who our head coach is going to be. In fact, when Brandon Staley interviewed for this job on the morning, he interviewed at 9:30 in the morning Pacific time for this job before he got in his car and went down to talk to the Chargers, at which point later in the day he got the Charger job. But when he was interviewing with Cassero, it was Cassero alone, and it was Cassero. The understanding was this was going to be Casario's hire. The recommendation, the guy who he wanted was going to get approved by the ownership of this team. And so to me, Mike, I think Nick Cassero thought that he was coming into a situation where he was going to have full personnel authority and control, and which I still think is going to happen. And he had no idea at that time that Deshaun Watson had told the owner of this team, or told anybody with this team that I am absolutely not coming back.
There were people in New England who had heard and who believed that Easterby had aspirations to be a general manager at some point. Remember when Bill Belichick did the press conference in advance of the New England game against Houston during football season after the Easterby stuff first was kicked up? Belichick had that quote about Easterby, he's not a personnel person. No. My understanding is that part of that came from this vibe that was prevailing in New England, that Easterby had these unrealistic aspirations to go from chaplain with the Chiefs, unpaid, a decade ago or less than that, into actually being a general manager of a team someday. That there were people in New England who knew it. Apparently Cassero didn't, or he wasn't troubled by it, wasn't bothered by it, wasn't threatened by the possibility. And speaking of Easterby, he came up yesterday during Cully's press conference. Let's hear Cully explain exactly what it is that Easterby does. Here he is.
I'm the head coach. Jack is he's vice president of football operations, which involves a bunch of things. It involves scheduling. It involves logistics around the building. It involves a bunch of things that go on here that he does a wonderful job of doing. And basically, it's a multitude of responsibilities.
Okay. So our personnel?
General manager is Nick. Nick handles all personnel.
That's what Cully had to say. But a multitude of responsibilities for Jack Easterby. Apparently not putting the toothpaste back in the tube after he saw what Cully had to say to Jim Trotter and Steve Wyche. But multitude of responsibilities. Without a whole lot of specifics, but that, you know, kind of meshes with the sense that Easterby's got his hand in a lot of different things, and he's got the blessing of Cal McNair. So, you know, who knows how far it goes, Peter. He continues to be this mysterious figure, even though he's gotten far more notoriety than he ever bargained for. We still don't really know what the guy's doing, but we know he's involved in a lot of things, a multitude of things, as Cully would say.
Yeah, I did a story last August, Mike, on a day in the life of an NFL team at training camp in this weird, weird year. And for that story, I had access to Easterby. I talked to him three or four times that day. And I also got to witness one of his big duties with the organization. And one of those big duties was at the end of the day, he had a half hour session where all the department heads reviewed what happened that day, what the issues were there any COVID related problems, were there any testing problems, anything like that. And then looking forward to the next day with, you know, who had this job, who had that job. And Bill O'Brien sat in the audience for that meeting. You know, there was no question that Jack Easterby was sort of setting the daily schedule, you know, which I'm sure because after this meeting, he met with Bill O'Brien to talk about those kind of things one-on-one. So I'm sure it was at O'Brien's, you know, it was in O'Brien's purview to say, Jack, this is your job. I need to now go coach the football team. You handle all of these details. And in training camp during the time of COVID, there were 1,000 details every day. And so that is, you know, to me, in the time of COVID, the vice president of football operations has a lot to do. And Mike, I would disagree with you on this. I don't think there's any evidence inside the Texans that Jack Easterby ever said or ever moved to become the general manager of this team. I think you can say a lot of negative things about him, but I don't think it was ever a serious consideration, if indeed he ever did a thing about it, that Cal McNair would have made him the general manager.
He was the interim general manager, Peter. He had the job.
Right, but
he was the guy.
All it was, he was a placeholder. That's all he was. To be a general manager, he was never going to be the general manager of this team.
I think he had aspirations to be. And at the time that this all happened, that's when people, especially in Houston, in the Houston media and the fans, you know, the fans ordinarily don't care about this kind of stuff. It's been amazing to me how the Texans fans have had the alarms go off and the red flags go up with Easterby. I don't think he expected the kind of scrutiny and blowback that he got as he reached closer and closer for that brass ring. And the blowback resulted in guys like Cal McNair saying he's never going to be the general manager of this team. That doesn't mean he didn't have the aspiration. It just means it got smacked down. It got ripped out of his hand because he climbed too fast. And people started to say, who the hell is this guy? And why is he climbing? And that was at the same time, Peter, questions were coming up about his resume and embellishment of his background and overstating of whatever limited experience. And it's extremely limited in football operations. That's when this all kind of came together. So what happened was he was getting closer and closer to pulling it off, and it blew up on him. I firmly believe that.
Yeah, I don't. And I think that his biggest mistake and the team's biggest mistake right now, quite honestly, when Jenny Verentis and Greg Bishop of Sports Illustrated had that story a few months ago about, you know, how disastrous his past and what was going on inside the team was, you know, for him not to talk publicly for that story and not to refute whatever it was in that story that he felt should have been refuted, A, it leads you to believe that, you know, to me, the team was setting him up to be the fall guy, or B, that they just made a terrible mistake in not allowing Easterby to defend himself. And I'm assuming that he wanted to defend himself. I don't know that, but I'm assuming. Who would want to have a story written about them that said you're a con artist or whatever? And I'm exaggerating that. But in essence, that was an extremely negative story about Easterby. Not to say that it was a bad story. I think it was a good story. But it was an extremely negative story about Easterby, and he should have spoken up and said something about it. Why do you not defend yourself in an august publication with two excellent journalists like that? I think it was ridiculous.
Well, Peter, maybe it's because you are a con artist and the jig is up. Maybe that's why you got nothing to say and you just keep your head low and you do everything short of calling the press the enemy of the people. It's that simple. That's kind of what con artists do. And we've witnessed that in other contexts over the past few years. And thank God we're not dealing with that anymore on a broader level. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Let's talk about the Miami Dolphins now. That's a potential destination for Deshaun Watson. Brian Flores, though, he's got to love the one he's with. And the one he's with is Tua Tagovailoa, the fifth overall pick in the 2020 draft. Here's Coach Flores from yesterday talking about what he hopes to see from Tagovailoa between year one and year two of his NFL career.
I'm excited about, you know, Tua in this upcoming season. I think, you know, we you think about his situation last year, coming off the hip. You know, he started 9 games. I thought he made a lot of improvement really throughout the course of the season. Had some ups, had some downs, like all the rookies and like any rookie. But I'm really excited about this, you know, that year one to year two jump.
Year one to year two may come somewhere else, though you can't rule out anything with the Dolphins, especially if they could get Deshaun Watson. All due respect to Tua Tagovailoa, we've seen enough from him to know he's not going to be a great shortlist franchise quarterback. He could prove us wrong. If we're giving him the motivation to prove us wrong, so be it. Great, I hope he is. I like him. I think he's a great kid. But you either have it or you don't. Justin Herbert has it. Joe Burrow has it. Tua doesn't. If they can get Deshaun Watson, they got to run with it. And that's one of the few places where it makes sense. They've got the draft capital to pull it off if they want to do it. And who knows? Does Tua go to Houston? Does he go somewhere else? But if they can't pull it off, then he presumably will get another year, Peter, with or without a relief pitcher, whether it's Ryan Fitzpatrick or someone else. And we'll see. Where do you think this plays for Tua going forward, whether it's with Miami or somewhere else? Have you seen enough from him to think he can get to that level of franchise quarterback?
Well, there's two teams that I think are best suited. Obviously, the two teams that are best suited to trade for Tua or trade for Watson are the New York Jets sitting there at number two and the Miami Dolphins sitting there at number three. But I believe that the Dolphins have a better chance to trade for a franchise quarterback like Watson, because I just think that from everything I'm hearing that Joe Douglas is really enamored of building this team through the draft and not basically ripping away all of the draft choices and all of these. Yeah, they've got a much better chance in Miami, I think, to put together a trade that would be the kind of bold trade that would take it. But Mike, the other team I think that has a very good chance to trade for him, if indeed he is traded, is the Carolina Panthers at number 8. The draft pick isn't quite as good, obviously, as where Miami is. But the reason why I think Carolina will be in the picture at some point before this is over is that that owner wants a franchise quarterback. He's not used to people telling him no. And so I think he's going to trade more than any other general manager might want to trade, maybe even including his own, Scott Fitterer. But I do think that the Carolina Panthers are going to be involved if there ever is an auction for Deshaun Watson.
You're absolutely right. David Tepper, very determined to get a franchise quarterback, whether it's Deshaun Watson, whether it's possibly Russell Wilson, although Wilson hasn't included the Panthers on his list of preferred destinations, or trade up in the draft to get one of the top guys. We don't know where Deshaun wants to go. We've heard bits and pieces. There have been reports he's intrigued by the Broncos, and there's a thought that the Dolphins are choice number one. But unlike Russell Wilson, whose agent 15 days ago announced the four teams for which Russell would play, we haven't gotten that yet from David Mulugeta or from Deshaun Watson, so we just don't know. And some have said, oh, he wouldn't want to go back to Carolina. Well, he was a star at Clemson. I wouldn't rule out anyone until we hear something directly or indirectly from Deshaun Watson. One thing we do know about the Houston Texans is that they've signed Mark Ingram to a one-year deal worth up to $3 million. Anytime you hear up to, that means there's incentives, there's other things he's got to do. And one thing he's got to do is be on the roster week one. This is a guy who's been around for 10 years. David Johnson is the starter there. This just may be a stabilizing presence in the offseason and training camp because David Culley knows him, and it could be at the end of the day doesn't even make the week one roster, Peter. I mean, this is a guy who once he was cut there hasn't been a land rush for his services, and he's done some good things in the past. But with running backs, there's a shelf life, and there's a chance he's reached that expiration date. We'll find out. But he's been available to every team, and he goes to a place where he's acquainted with the head coach, and he has a chance to contribute in that running game. But clearly, he's not the top guy.
Yeah, and Mike, the one other factor in all of this is that, you know, I reported a couple of weeks ago that that Nick Caserio was not even countering, was not even considering any offers, which is the right thing to do. It is absolutely the right thing to do at this point in time. Now, let's just say we get to August 23, August 24. And then let's say that Nick Caserio on Monday of draft week calls five teams and he says, you got until 8 o'clock tonight to come up with your best offer. Give me your best offer by 8 o'clock tonight. We'll have a decision for you by Wednesday morning. However you would do that. But I think there is there would be some attraction to me basically to do a blind auction. That would take advantage of David Tepper's eagerness. And that would take advantage of a team that desperately wants him to maybe throw in that, you know, you've already, let's say, because I think Carolina's going to have to offer three ones. So let's say you not only offer three ones and you've offered a couple of other things. Now you go beyond that. You say, we'll give you our next two threes, you know, or something like that. But if the Houston Texans end up trading Deshaun Watson, you look at that roster right now, that roster basically is an expansion team roster. And you in essence, have to get enough material and enough young players out of this thing to rebuild your roster. And Mike, I'll say one other thing. I'd rather have the draft picks in 2022 than 21. Because as I wrote last Monday, this is a bad year to pick players and to assume that guys who might have only played 1 year and then opted out. I mean, how do you know who you're drafting? And that's why if I am a GM, if I'm Nick Caserio, I want the bulk of these picks in 22 and 23.
Yeah, that's a great point. The draft is a crapshoot. It's going to be even more of one this year than ever before, even more of one than last year because of the limited games, the guys opting out, no scouting combine, no opportunity to bring guys in. It's going to be difficult when it comes to making those picks. All right, when we return, Jack Easterby calls in to defend himself against these baseless allegations. That's not going to be happening anytime soon, if ever. The Chiefs dismantling their offensive line. We'll discuss that next here on Pro Football Talk Live.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
With the guys that are injured that are potentially coming back or opted out or potentially coming back, we'll kind of get all that covered here in the next couple days. I don't think the outlook is bleak by any means. We should be good there.
The outlook isn't bleak at offensive line after they got manhandled by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Super Bowl 55. Eric Fisher wasn't available to play, tore an Achilles tendon in the AFC Championship game. Mitchell Schwartz missed a lot of the season with back issues. On Thursday, Peter, both guys abruptly and surprisingly released in bang-bang fashion by the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, I've been waiting for a stunner, and I don't know that this qualifies, but I was surprised. This isn't one that we expected. I didn't expect both guys, much less either guy, to go. And there's the thank you. Teams do that now. Thank you for everything. Now, please get the hell out, both Mitchell Schwartz and thank you very much. And now you are no longer employed by this organization. How surprised were you when it happened, Peter?
Very. But then you hear that Schwartz may be needing another surgery and his future could be uncertain. And, you know, you don't know a guy who's played as much, you know, as Eric Fisher has, who's got the cap hit that he has. I mean, how do you know what kind of physical condition he's going to be in coming back? And look, I know that Andy Reid has bigger fish to fry this offseason, but I know from years of Reid watching, and you ask everybody who ever worked with him, going back to Green Bay, but certainly starting in the late 90s when he was the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, going all the way through then, his trademark in the draft room preparing for the draft is, you know, always, always, always have depth on the offensive line. Always be prepared on the offensive line. And this year, unfortunately for them, they get Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who opts out because he wants to continue his medical career, you know, and good for him because of COVID up in Canada. And then, you know, the third round pick who they drafted, who also opted out. So they got, honestly, the Chiefs, I'm not saying they got blindsided, but the Chiefs thought that they were going to have a little bit of a cushion on the offensive line this year. And it turns out by the end of the year, they didn't. And Mike, let me just tell you one thing. 13 months ago, when the Kansas City Chiefs played in the Super Bowl against, you know, and really probably should have beaten the San Francisco 49ers. But when they played in that Super Bowl, I mean, obviously they did beat the Niners, excuse me. But when they played in that Super Bowl, all five offensive linemen in that Super Bowl, every one of them could be gone this year. Now, Duvernay-Tardif has said publicly he wants to return and play in this year. We'll see if that happens. But again, this just goes to show you, you know, in the old Jerry Glanville thing, NFL stands for not for long. This just goes to show you that, you know, in the NFL, you better be prepared for, you know, the emergency beyond the emergency. And so the Kansas City Chiefs, you talk about all the things they need this offseason, they better cut their cap a little bit tight so that they can afford a Kevin Zeitler or something like that in free agency this coming off season.
And I think that's the key when you mention a Kevin Zeitler or whoever else is going to be available. The Chiefs projecting that they're going to have more reliable options on the offensive line than the guys they currently have. As players get cut by other teams, as free agents end up looking around wondering where the big money is, you eventually accept the fact that you're not going to get the big money. You're going to be lucky to have a job. Hey, how about go play for the Chiefs, play for Patrick Mahomes? It's easier to do a good job on the offensive line when you have a guy with Patrick Mahomes' mobility and elusiveness, which he has unlike most other quarterbacks currently in the NFL. So whether it's Zeitler, whether it's Nate Solder, if it doesn't work out with him as he comes back from opting out, and the Giants clearly aren't going to pay him $10 million this year, there will be options out there for the Chiefs to bring in and improve their offensive line. And this is an exercise. Rick Spielman told me this last week, the longtime GM of the Vikings. It is going to be a constant exercise. And he didn't put it quite this way, but he agreed with my characterization. As guys become available, you're going to look at who you have. And you're going to make some decisions to get rid of some of the guys you have and go out and get guys who are available. And I think the Chiefs doing this preemptively, instead of waiting for a guy to fall into their laps, they have the belief, possibly because they've been talking to people, you know, during those conversations that aren't supposed to happen that we know every team engages in, they have an idea who they're going to get. So they know who they're going to get. We move on from Fisher and Schwartz, and our plan will eventually reveal itself to anyone who's paying attention as to who's going to be blocking for Patrick Mahomes next year, Peter.
You know, there's a couple of positions in free agency that, to me, are surprisingly robust. Okay? Doesn't really surprise me that you've got a lot of wide receivers, because, quite honestly, there usually are good wide receivers most years in free agency. But the couple of things that really kind of interest me, like, I think where the Kansas City Chiefs are going to need some help, there have been a lot of pretty good offensive linemen who have either been consigned to the scrap heap or, you know, quite clearly have been cap cuts. We mentioned one of them in Kevin Zeitler of the Giants, the former Browns guard. And to me, you know, you've also got a really good center, one of the best centers in football, Corey Linsley, you know, is on the list. What about Joe Thuney? You know, Joe Thuney right now, as you listen to what the Patriots might do, it looks as though they're going to basically sit on the sidelines and make him go get a really good offer. So there's a lot of players at the positions of need that the Chiefs, now they might have to compete for some of them, but who knows what a phone call from Patrick Mahomes might do.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to see that this year, I firmly believe. The opportunity for some of these teams to become super teams where they can go out and rent guys for a year at a low cost as they wait for the salary cap to rebuild itself next year once normalcy returns for the NFL. So you take a year, you chase a ring, and then you go get paid next year when things are back to where they were supposed to be before everything got turned upside down. Austin Ryder, the Chiefs center, also is expected to sign elsewhere in free agency. That could open the door for a Corey Linsley. All other things relevant like cap space and contract and who else may want Linsley. But this is going to be a strange, very strange free agency period. The stars still get paid. There just won't be as many who get paid. And we saw 10 franchise tags applied this week. Those tags don't get applied if their teams don't fear that there would be the kind of offer in free agency that they would be unable or unwilling to match. So stars will get paid, and there will be that parade of press conferences and announcements and teams reveling in the fact that they have some big-name player that joins the franchise. But other than those guys, there's going to be a lot of players that get squeezed. And that middle class of recognizable veteran name, those are the guys that are going to be bearing the cost, Peter, of the losses arising from the pandemic. Because all the players got fully compensated last year, even though the NFL's revenue reportedly was down $4 billion. Someone's got to pay the price for that on the player side, and it's going to be that middle class of veterans this year. And there's going to be a lot of guys available, and they're going to end up signing for a lot less money than they ever thought they were going to earn this year.
You said it a minute ago, Mike, when you said there will be scads of one-year contracts signed. Like, you know, one of the guys who I look at, and one of the guys we're going to be talking about in hour number two, is Bud Dupree. And you look at Bud Dupree, and he's coming off a year in which he exploded early in the year. He was great. Then he gets hurt, misses the rest of the season. So now nobody is really sure if they're going to get vintage Bud Dupree. They probably will. But he is the perfect candidate to a guy to play 2021 to sing for his supper and for his big long-term contract when the cap goes up again in 2022. I think there's going to be 30 of those guys. I mean, usually there's a few of them, but this year I think there might be more of those than there will be of the CJ Mosleys. You know, the guys who, you know, because only a few teams have the money to give out these $80 million contracts, which, surprise, don't really become $80 million contracts.
Yeah, it usually happens with the guy who suffers the catastrophic injury like a Bud Dupree. This year it's going to happen to guys who are perfectly healthy who are just like, what the hell? Where's my where, I've been working all these years for my payday. Where is it? It's not going to happen this year for most of those guys. Let's take a break. When we return, where will the payday happen for Juju Smith-Schuster? And is there a chance it's going to happen for him in Pittsburgh? And by the way, will this be Patrick Mahomes' life next year? That would be difficult. Even with his elusiveness, I think that would be a difficult thing for him to pull off. Him and no one. He doesn't even have receivers. It's just 11 on one. He'd probably get a first down eventually. We'll be back with more right after this. Juju Smith-Schuster due to become a free agent. SI asked yesterday, will Juju stay in Pittsburgh? I hope so, 11%. That's a negative, 89%. Among those who voted, that's a negative. Oh, there he is, Juju. I would say, you know, in theory, all votes count the same. For something like this, I would say a vote from the guy that the poll is about would tend to carry a little more weight. So no more Juju in Pittsburgh. Not a surprise. They got a lot of great receivers, Peter. They know how to draft them. I don't know what Juju Smith-Schuster is going to get on the open market. He's not a number one receiver. He doesn't have the speed to take the top off a defense. He's a great number two, arguably the best number two in the NFL, but he's not a number one. We'll see how much someone's willing to pay him, but it clearly won't be the Steelers.
Yeah, I look at Juju's situation like in some ways he's a little bit of a luxury. And, you know, if I'm New England and I have a need at wide receiver, I need a more explosive wide receiver than Juju Smith-Schuster, or that's what I would want. Now, Juju Smith-Schuster at a manageable salary, I'll take that. And at a salary by 2021 terms is lower than you'd normally have to pay, I'd love to have him on my team. He's a gamer. He's totally, totally unselfish. And, you know, I look at this and look, a lot of times when you look at the odds for teams to get him, you know, Vegas has been much talked about. And I don't deny that they will be involved in this. But I guess I look at Vegas and I see how bad a job that they have done in free agency. And you see all the money that they've spent that they basically wasted in free agency. Look at Trent Brown. What a disaster of a signing that was. So we'll see.
And you see that plus 300 for the Steelers. Don't bet the Steelers plus 300, not after yesterday. We'll see you in a minute.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.